in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the first Juice Blog podcast. I mean, you're used to hearing my voice since I do it at BPR. I'm Will Carroll. The voice you're about to hear is Scott Long.
Yes, that is me, and this is our first podcast. And, of course, being the Juice Blog, our first podcast would be dedicated to music.
Of course. Correct? Yeah, correct? Because at Baseball Toaster, we're all about music.
You know what I like about the Toaster? I've noticed some subtle references by some of the other bloggers now to more and more music.
It's our influence.
Yeah, I really don't think it has to do with influence, at least on my side.
Well, we try. Okay. You know, and I'm still waiting to hear this whole Fallout Boy story. They're on Letterman last night, and
right.
It makes a nice segue into my number one, which was Fallout Boy's From Under the Cork Tree. Now, I'm not going to make any sort of you know, impression that this is an important album, that this is a historic album, that this is anything approaching some of the better albums we've had. Yeah, if we look back at other albums that were our number ones, you know, we've had American Idiot, which remains the top contender for album of the decade. We've got something like Flaming Lips, Yoshimi Battles of the Pink Robots, which is still a brilliant, brilliant album. And the question then is, how does this album become number one when there were other, not as good, but what I think will be more important albums? The answer is, for me, this album was complete. It was the voice of a generation. We've had this whole emo, young, pseudo-pop punk thing going on for a couple years, and this one was finally the one that got it right, broke out, and really, when I look back at this year, it was the one album that I listened to over and over, not because it said anything to me, though it did,
right.
Not because the music was phenomenal, but it is, but because it just seems to be the album that speaks of the year most to me. It's the album that I think will be like 2005, that it really wasn't that memorable.
Well, in case you're listening and you think that this is just going to be one big circle jerk for music, and not the band, but the actual activity, it's not.
They didn't put out anything this year, did they?
No, I don't think so. Will and I, and we've not discussed this purposely, outside of, I don't think either one of us thought our lists were worth a crap.
I like my list.
No,
your
I'm talking
list was crap.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah.
And I feel very strongly, and I appreciate your comments, because I feel very similar about your list. The only exception in your top 10 that I'm thinking of offhand, and we'll work through them, is that I thought this was a legitimate, you know, quality release. I was fine with it. I thought it was good. It didn't make my top 10. It was right outside of it. And part of the reason, I really don't think emo is good music for the most part. I'm not saying
you're
old. No, I don't think that is. I am a bit old, though I look younger than you in my delusional mind. My point of view on being the best emo album is like declaring yourself the best pork rind flavor. You know,
yeah.
It's crap.
What do you have against pork rinds?
I've eaten them before. I was on the Atkins diet. That's about the only thing you can eat that's crunchy on the Atkins diet.
Man. Sometimes you just crave crunchy.
Uh-huh.
And we pause because the phone is ringing.
And I got to say that I'm not even sure what emo is. That is me speaking
well,
old.
What is punk? I mean,
but this isn't
things.
Punk. I mean, I understand. Is Green Day emo? Because it's
not
that different, though.
No, but, you know, is Green Day punk? No.
No, that's what I mean.
It's still there.
Okay.
I mean, emo is just a word to describe a certain sort of thing. I always thought of Dashboard Confessional.
I've never really liked them.
No, I haven't either. But, you know, they're whiny and emotional.
Right.
But it was that do-it-yourself kind of, you know, relation to punk that gave it. Is it different? Is it a distinct genre of music? Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are a number of good bands. You don't have to enjoy them, but nonetheless, they're pretty good. My Chemical Romance, you can go.
See, they don't do anything for me either. And I'll say that I thought this Jimmy Eat World.
Jimmy Eat World is on the edge. They're more pop than emo,
okay,
but
well,
they're there.
I've always liked them. I thought that the.
And I think Fall Out Boy was, you know. If you look at Jimmy Eat World, if you look at Fall Out Boy, very, very similar music.
Okay. No, and I like both of those bands. I thought that Fall Out Boy was good. I thought the Sugar We're Going Down is one of the best pop singles mm-hmm. of the year, mm-hmm. and the Dynamite video, and just everything. So I'm cool with that. This could be about the last moment of the whole podcast where there won't be any kind of physical violence in us discussing these groups.
That's right. Luckily, we have hardwood floors here in my kitchen.
Well, you can hear that from your dogs running around. It sounds like a kennel.
Yeah. And
fortunately, it smells better.
Luckily. I did try to clean up a little bit. But, you know, the situation is, it's okay to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the fun. You can say, hey, why don't you check out Bright Eyes? And I can go, oh, yes, this sounds like absolute crap.
See, there we go. This, let's get into that. We've spoken enough
about
that.
We know about Fall Out Boy, and we'll disagree that you think it's not good enough to be in your top ten.
I can tell you right now.
I can see other years where it wouldn't have been my top ten.
I am shocked that I chose Bright Eyes as the top album.
I'm also shocked because you have taste.
No, I'm telling you, I never really cared for Connor. I never quite understood it. I thought it was just a bunch of, rock critics who live in New York City, and they probably go to the same clubs as Connor, and they hang out with him and Ryan Adams, and they, do their own little circle jerking themselves.
Oh, see, now you're bringing Ryan Adams into it.
And look, I like Ryan Adams, but I've never felt he's made a great album. His problem, in my opinion, is I sit, in my own little world where I don't put out any albums, is he puts out too many.
Yeah. He's Prince.
Yes, it's very similar to Prince in a different way.
All got Prince.
Right, all country version Prince, whatever you want to say. But, and then as I wrote on the blog, what was interesting to me was last year they had the old Rockford John Kerry deal, which is just a complete difference of there's nothing rock and roll about John Kerry.
Right.
No rock. There might be some roll to him. But they had this great list.
Kerry 2008, yes.
Right. You had Springsteen, you had Mellencamp, you had Fogerty, you had Pearl Jam on these concerts, and then you see Bright Eyes. And
yeah, speaking of circle jerks, there it was. That, looking back, we can see why the red states voted red.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I look at those words. I put those people together with Bright Eyes, and I just hear Bob from Sesame Street singing, one of these things is not like the other. Because to me, it didn't seem like he belonged on the stage with these people. And I truthfully didn't think so. Then I hear, I'm Awake, It's a Morning, I think it's a great album. Do I think it's as good as American Idiot or White Stripes Elephant or some of those from... No, I don't. But to me, this album was a person coming into their own. I thought that as singer-songwriters, I don't believe Ryan Adams ever made an album half as good as this, in my opinion. And I could tell you also...
For me, Ryan Adams can sing. I mean,
do you think Bob Dylan's a great singer?
No, but, I mean, are you really comparing Bright Eyes to Bob Dylan?
Is there
any song on there that
Oh, not the peak of Dylan.
The freewheeling Bob Dylan Blood on the Tracks.
Well...
Yeah, to me...
No, but I think there's two or three songs...
Because I actually tolerated Digital Ash and A Digital Urn more than I did, Wide Awake It's Morning.
Mm. See, I hear, to me, my favorite... I hear echoes of Paul Westerberg in some of the songs. I hear echoes of Nick Drake, obviously. And then Dylan in the mix, but I know that's like putting a big...
I think you and me, both big fans of Paul Westerberg.
Huge.
Don't we want to hear the next Paul Westerberg because now he's just old and bitter like us?
Yeah, I do, and I think that there are moments on this, as much as I've ever heard, that to me sounded like, Waitress in the Sky or Androgynous and stuff, but they were actually, I think, some beautiful moments on the thing. There's no way I'm going to be able to explain. If you don't like his voice, you can't get past it. I understand that. I think the lyrics are brilliant, personally, and I'm not just a lyrics guy. I really need, I need that music, I need the sound, and the voice works for me, and there's a... I think Connor maybe listened to a few too many Cure albums in his basement in Omaha where he grew up, but at the same time, it really connected with me. Wasn't expecting it. probably never been blindsided more by someone thinking that they put out a great album. But we should just go on to the next.
Well, the interesting thing to me here is that, you know, we're looking for this, you know, next great thing, and we have such a hard time, you know, letting someone be that. You know, Ryan Adams is about the closest thing to an auteur we have now, and I don't know what A&R rep he has that keeps letting him put out 12 albums a year.
Yeah, that's probably just part of his contract. He just says, look, that's part of the deal, and we know, you know,
didn't
as somebody who's a huge Prince fan. Yeah, but, well, Prince.
Well, see, and that's the other thing. Going back to Ryan Adams and the Prince comparison, Prince always put out, for the most part, really solid albums beginning to end. And mm-hmm. Ryan Adams put out 3 albums this year that were stylistically close enough that it could have been one great album.
Yeah.
It probably would have made my top 10.
Yes, it definitely would have made my top 10 if you know, take his work with the Cardinals and everything and put it together. I would say this, it doesn't matter if you're Bright Eyes or Ryan Adams, there's no place on the radio for you anyway on a major level. And you're never going to sell albums like a Springsteen or a Dylan. It's just, it doesn't exist. It's a different, you know, musical landscape.
Is it? I was talking about this with my friend Keith Shearer. And you know, Rolling Stones were the biggest tour, like, of all time last year. And Bigger Bang, an album that did make my top 10,
mm-hmm.
A good album, not just a good late-stage Rolling Stones album. But, you know, when we look at the tours, we had Rolling Stone, we had R.E.M., we had U2. These are bands that somehow have this connection. And even if their album, like R.E.M.'s last album, I don't even know if I've heard the whole thing.
It's miserable.
But if R.E.M. came to town, and, you know, last time they came to town, they came to Murat, which is a small, you know, couple thousand-seat stadium, and by the time I knew that it was in existence, that it was already
tickets
sold out. And I would still go see R.E.M.
Oh, completely.
Is there a band today that's building up that kind of career? Because I look back, and, you know, I think of the Rolling Stones as, I don't want to say an oldies act.
They are an oldies act. I don't care if you put the new album out. You know, we're not going to be chronological here.
No.
My point of view about the new Rolling Stones album was I put it on, and the first thing I hear is, I've never heard Mick sound any better in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. His voice sounded better.
He was re-engaged.
Not only that, but it's his that low register that he constantly had. He wasn't stuck in that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I love the sound of his voice. The production, awesome. Sounded beautiful. I don't think you could make the Rolling Stones sound any better in 2005 than they did. I thought Keith's playing was great, and the drumming, Charlie Watts, was spectacular. I've never heard a 50-year-old sound any better on the drums, let alone a 70-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, having said all those things, and I would put that album right on the edge of my top 20, I couldn't put it in my top 10 because I listened to it again, and I'm like, maybe it's the world of the pod, you know, the iPod or, you know, your whatever MP3 player you own. I've got 15 other Rolling Stones albums on that iPod. Do I want to listen to this over Sticky Fingers? Do I want to listen to this over... you know, Exile on Main Street. Do I want to even listen to this over Some Girls? I don't. And, you know, I just ultimately feel like, why am I listening to this when I have that? Now, in the world before, that, it's a situation where I feel like the Rolling Stones, you know, are penalized in many ways mm-hmm. from their past work. Do I want to listen to someone doing a really good Stones version? Or do I just want to listen to the real deal that I've got in my pocket and I can just flip at it? And that's why I think in 2 or 3 years, I'll probably never listen to that recent Rolling Stones album ever again. I'll go back to the stuff that I like the most.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem I have with almost any act that's got 20 or 30. Elvis Costello, I don't think he's putting out that great of stuff, but at the same time, he could put out a phenomenal piece, and I probably still would go, God, you know what? I'd rather listen to, you know, the first one. Or I'd rather listen to Armed Forces. Or I'd even want to listen to King of America. I just don't think...
Speaking of America, most underrated album of all time?
I can't think of one that would be any more underrated in my book. I mean, it's my favorite of Elvis Costello.
Oh, see, you made the common error. It's not an Elvis Costello album.
Well, I understand that. Yeah. It's a Declan
McManus. See, those are great. And that one was a breakup album as he was getting married.
Oh, I know.
Brilliant as that.
Yeah.
I mean, there was another album this year that was going to be a breakup album, and I was just like, ooh, this is going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't. I'm trying to think what it was.
Was it Phil Collins? No, I think he did that 20 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, but he's moved on to the next heiress.
Yeah.
You know, what I love, it's Rodan Sonata.
Beautiful.
Still one of the, I mean, when he came out with I Love Everybody, and yeah. I'm a huge I Love It fan.
Right.
I was just like, well, this album's okay.
It is. It was, you know, it was a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
And if you got it on your iPod, you don't even put the whole thing on. You take about 8 songs and you make a really great mm-hmm. a great album out of it.
And then, but you knew going into it, you're like, oh, there is going to be a brutal, brutal, bitter breakup album that is just going to be phenomenal. And it came.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think what that other breakup album was that I was thinking about. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the rest of our list.
Okay, go to your number 2.
My number 2 was Death Cab for Cutie.
Mm-hmm.
Again, an album that's been tagged as emo, though, you know, they still have that Seattle pseudo post grunge. Okay, I'm not even going to pigeonhole them because there's not many bands like this. They're actually coming out with what you could look at as a concept album, you could look at as a singles album, you could look at as, you know, just sort of an atmospheric piece. My top 3 or 4 all could have gone to number 1.
Mm-hmm.
And Death Cab for Cutie is the one, which the most ridiculous band name in quite a while.
Yeah.
This album actually had several moments where I was just literally kind of jaw-dropped because I didn't expect it from them. Even after Transatlanticism, which was a very good album that showed a lot of growth.
That was the one that was the critics were all over,
yeah.
And if I recall, neither one of us had that in our top tens at all.
It just wasn't quite there for me.
Right.
You know, there were the great moments of the title song, the opening song, The New Year, is one of those that sticks with. This album, beginning to end, is just one of the most tightly produced, but not overproduced. There's the third song called Summer Skin actually has this backing, probably synthesized vocals that reminds me of the 1985 album by the Dream Academy.
Mm-hmm. I can hear that.
And just the whole album. And then there's one song called What Sarah Said.
Mm-hmm.
Crushing. You listen to that song and you're just like, ugh. And I can remember, and this is a bad reference, but Bryan Adams once wrote a song around a line. And talked about it on MTV back when they played videos. And that stuck with me. And I think more and more I'm hearing that, you know, I'll come up with a line. You know, something will enter my head and I'll work to get it in a column. And I'm hearing more and more songwriters, or at least noticing that more.
Right.
Death Cab for Cutie, I think this is the album that's probably going to make them pretty big. They're doing an ambitious video project on their website. They've really been embraced by both young and old. This is a really, really dark album for as good as it sounds.
Yeah. I don't agree that this is a fully developed album. I feel like it's a singles album, in my opinion. I can listen to 4 or 5 of the songs. I enjoyed them. I thought it was a better piece than their debut, but at the same time, it doesn't reach a top 30 level for me. At the same time, you know, I can see where people dig it, but they just have never connected with me. They have connected a little more with me this time. I guess last year it was kind of everyone seemed to be on Arcade Fire. And
I never heard.
I tried and tried, and it just, to me...
It's kind of like the Killers and the Bravery.
Well, we'll get into that a little
yeah.
bit because one of those bands do connect with me and the other one doesn't. But ultimately, you know, I'm kind of, I don't have any great feelings one way or the other about the band. So to me, I was shocked that on your list. And I'm guessing that you're not a fan of this band that much. My number two is the White Stripes. And this was not an easy album.
Okay? No, it's not. And we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back with part two, we'll talk about the White Stripes and a lot of other albums on the Juices First podcast.
You got a time on that? Or?
No, I just figured.